Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Zach Seiko. Zach, how'd you feel about a weekend without Penn State football?
You know what? I appreciated the break. I'm sure the football team did, but I don't blame the fans for missing a Penn State football game.
I did. I missed it a bit, but I also found it kind of, it was a little bit of fun just to watch college football as an outsider, watching the different games. And I've said this earlier in the week. This weekend, I think I again got the appreciation for college football is the best sport in the world.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
It's I think it's so much better than the NFL. I enjoyed a lot of the other games. I was out, so I missed a lot of the day games, but I got to watch Georgia, Texas. It was a lot of fun. I know there's all those comments about, well, the 12-team playoffs has kind of devalued the regular season. I really don't feel that way. I don't think I could have enjoyed the game more if it was only a four-team playoff. I think the games that I watched were all very entertaining.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I don't get that distinction at all, because I think the 12-team playoff opens up a lot it's not exclusive anymore. I don't think that devalues it. I think that opens up 12 fan bases to have their favorite college team when it matters most.
I agree. And I think it was Herb Street who brought up, he gave a certain number of teams that he thought were still in it. I can't recall what the number was, but it's even well beyond 12. If you would go conference by conference and just say, yeah, here are teams that are undefeated or with just one loss, you add it up, it gets to much more than 12 teams, which I think is fantastic for the sport. All right, Zach, let's take a look a little more specifically at this Penn State team, kind of check out where they've been, where they are, where they're headed for the rest of the season, and we will look into this Penn State-Wisconsin matchup coming on Saturday evening. But first, again, we're at the halfway point. This is a good place to do some assessment. The team is 6-0. Is that where you expected them to be?
Yeah, and I think anything else wouldn't have necessarily been a disappointment. Well, 4-2, 3-3, obviously. But if they did lose that game to USC, they could at least have overcome the defeat. You still have a chance for the 12-team playoff, or everybody says that the 12-team playoff was built for schools like Penn State. And I think that's fair to an extent, because Penn State, out of the past, if they had taken it all the way, I think it's 10 years, Penn State would have made it 8 times. So, yes, the 12-team playoff absolutely benefits where Penn State has been, a top 10 team that just can't find its way into the elite group of those top 4 teams. But at 6-0, Penn State's in control of its own destiny. It's very realistic to think that they'll go 11-1. I think it's also realistic to think that they can go 12-0. They can beat Ohio State. That game's in Beaver Stadium. The way that people talk about it, oh, let's just chalk that up to a loss. Penn State's not looking at it that way, and neither is Vegas. Vegas thinks that that's a 4-point game right now in favor of the Buckeyes, but they are expecting a close type of game between Penn State and Ohio State in a little over a week's time. You have to get through Wisconsin, I understand that, but Penn State is in total control of its destiny, and it's not as long as you keep winning games, you don't have to leave it up to the judgment of a committee. You don't have to sit there at 10-2 on pins and needles saying, where are they going to rank us? Are we going to even get a home game? Penn State is doing everything well, 6-0, absolutely expected, because they were the better team above everybody else. They were better than USC. They were better than West Virginia. They were better than Illinois. There's really no debating it. The better team won all 6 of those games.
Let's take a look. I like the games that you mentioned, because I did want to ask you about that.
Sure.
They were able to beat West Virginia and USC on the road and Illinois at home. Those are their 3 best wins. No wins against the top 10 team. How good is that schedule? How good were those 3 wins?
Well, it depends on who you ask. I still have value in a true road game. They dominated West Virginia. It's not like that was a close one where they snuck in and snuck out of Morgantown. They won 34 to 12, and that was without playing a full first quarter of football, right? That was a pretty, it's like, oh man, they have some jitters here, and then they took over second quarter and beyond. Road games matter to the committee. Road games matter to the people that are actually ranking these teams. If you're asking casual college football fans or people that might not appreciate Penn State as much, they're going to say, well, West Virginia's bad because they lost a couple of other close games and they lost to opponents that were better than them. These teams are losing to other teams that are better than them. In USC's case, I think they got caught in a bad spot across the board. Michigan makes a quarterback change in the middle of the week. They go on the road to Ann Arbor as that first true road game for them. They're caught in a bad spot. Same thing, they don't really match up well with Minnesota, which is why I'm like, okay, if they're losing these games, then they're probably going to lose to Penn State too, because Penn State does the same things that Michigan and Minnesota do, but better. And that was the case. So out on the road, because I don't, Michigan does not win that game in Southern California. Minnesota does not win that game against USC if it's a road game. The home field absolutely matters. And then USC, okay, well, they lost to Maryland. Maryland's not bad. Maryland's a pretty like pretty middle of the road team. They should finish, right? They have their season in front of them. They absolutely expect to finish 8-4, maybe a 9-3 if all goes well, that other game being a loss to Penn State at the end of the season. But for USC, I have already pointed this out. Did you, as college athletes, these aren't pros, Jim. Everybody knows that, but I think some people need a reminder. As a group of college players, do you really want to go on the road to play a Maryland team that just got their teeth kicked in by Northwestern? And that so and in order to do that, you got to fly 6 hours across the country to play a Maryland team that it's different maybe if you're playing in Ohio State. Or if you're playing another team that can really revitalize your season. But Penn State just ended your college football playoff hopes a season ago, and then a bunch of 18 to 22-year-olds have to fly across the country to play a Maryland team that just doesn't inspire a lot of motivation. I understand the loss, and I was kind of anticipating it, in that setup. It just didn't work out. So for USC, the ball bounces a couple of different ways. They're undefeated aside from the loss to Penn State.
And you know, the thing with USC, as a Penn State fan or follower, and you talk about that win, you're not going to convince the people who look at things nationally. You can't change the fact that USC has now lost four games. And it feels like when we talk about the close losses USC has had, that it's some kind of justification. But the one that I point out is, remember, this USC team also beat LSU, Zach.
Yeah, and that was on a neutral site. So no, they didn't exactly go to Baton Rouge, but that they also, I mean, they play, USC is a good football team. I think they're missing some key players on defense that really should have helped them. Penn State's a better team than USC, but I think they just caught in a lot of bad other spots. I think, and then again, these are college student athletes. You have to remember, okay, and in the NFL, you're still not out until you're out. Like the season's not over until give or take week 14 or 15. For USC, that's demoralizing. After four or five games, and you still have a whole second half of a schedule to play, and Penn State in that moment essentially knocks you out of the playoffs. How do you? I wouldn't want to show up to work the next day, right? So I understand USC losing that game because there's just not a lot to play for. The argument's been made, well, they're paid now. So is everybody making hundreds of millions of dollars on their contract? No. Somebody might have an NIL deal where they sponsor a coffee brand or something like that. Not all things are equal in this case, and it's not it. They still have a lot of other responsibilities. I'm getting too far off the beaten path here, Jim. But USC is not a bad football team. Losses are justified. Are they acceptable? No, because they had bigger goals, bigger aspirations. But Penn State still, oh, well, teams can't win when they fly across the coast. Well, Penn State did. USC did not.
That is exactly it. And it seems to be really a focus this year that how tough it is to win on the road. You know, we saw that two time zone statistic in the Big Ten. You know, teams are only 1-8.
Ohio State, same thing.
Yes. Now, they were playing a very good Oregon team, and I think Ohio State on the road, they probably would have beaten any of the other West Coast teams with the performance they had against Oregon. But I don't think there's any doubt that making that kind of road trip does have an effect, does cost you a few points. And I think that probably was the difference for Ohio State. Also, Zach, and I think in this year where we're seeing so many teams get upset, I mean, we have Northern Illinois beating Notre Dame. We have Vanderbilt beating Alabama. And both those teams still have a path to make the playoffs. It's a, where it is a lot more similar to the NFL is win in advance. Just make sure you come away with a win, whether it was impressive or ugly.
Well, and that's the thing. Winning cures everything. Okay, a win is a win, whether you win by 1 point, 100 points. That's all that matters here. And Penn State is one of the few teams that is still undefeated. Bowling Green wasn't a pretty game. To an extent, UCLA wasn't a pretty game. But they've showed me things that say, okay, this is an elite caliber football team. You're down 20-6 in Los Angeles. Everybody else is done. I don't know how many other teams can make that kind of comeback and win in overtime with, again, a 24-36 hour turnaround after you drop in. There's not a week to prepare for that. They flew in, they dropped in with about 24 hours to get used to everything, play a game of football, and they went to overtime too. They went to overtime and they outlasted the team that was waiting for them after that 6 hour flight. So, yeah, in the case of a Notre Dame losing a game that they definitely should have, I wouldn't be making the same case had Penn State lost to a Bowling Green. Okay, they're undefeated. Notre Dame is not. In Ohio State's case, they played a very tough Oregon team, but Penn State also can't help who it plays on the schedule, and they also can't help who other teams play on a week-by-week basis. I think that's something else that people kind of neglect here is that Penn State can't help that West Virginia loses to another team, or that USC loses to or is missing some key players and is going through a tough stretch. You control what you control, and I think that's why James Franklin says that a lot.
That is exactly it. And if you get the win, hey, Alabama, they lost to Vanderbilt. Georgia survived, say, Kentucky by a point, but they won. That's the big deal. Get the W. All right, Zach, that's it for quarter number one. Come quarter two, we're going to be looking ahead. Stay tuned for that. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante. He is Zach Seiko. Zach, let our listeners know where they can find all your podcasts.
I appreciate that, Jim. So I'm the host of Locked On Nittany Lions, and you can find any of the podcasts. They are up daily, Monday through Friday, with bonus content in between, some live streams for post-game as well. Like for this weekend, Penn State, Wisconsin, we'll have a live stream recap of it. But that is Locked On Nittany Lions on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. If you like to listen on Spotify, Apple, all of them, you can find it anywhere.
Make sure you do that. Some great stuff there from Zach. All right, Zach, we spent the first segment kind of looking back at where Penn State is now. I want to look ahead, but let's first start with where they are. Number three in the country. I think any Penn State fan, if you had talked to them prior to the season and said, hey, halfway point, you'll be ranked number three, you got to be pretty happy with that.
Yeah, they're number three, and I think that's fitting. I actually don't mind the coaches poll, the AP top 25, I do not mind Penn State being jumped by Georgia. I think Georgia being the number two team in the country is fair, because not only did they go on the road to a number one Texas team, and Penn State was on a bye, but they won that game convincingly, 30-15. I mean, the double digits on the road like that, a team that was supposed to be the favorite to that point, I have no issue with that. If Georgia had been blown out by Alabama, say that deficit stayed the same at halftime, I forget what the halftime margin was, but I know that Alabama was leading by, what, 3 or 4 touchdowns. If that had stayed consistent, I'd say, okay, now Penn State should probably be the number two team in this case, but Georgia, it was a close one against Alabama. There's an argument to be made that they could have won that game. They didn't, but they could have won that game, and then they absolutely flattened Texas. Like, Texas had no chance. I was watching that game, and I never thought they could have made it back in. So Penn State at number three, they didn't play a game, so there's really nothing to judge here. They need to stay put. I don't think they should be any lower. I don't think they should be any higher. I think the polls get it right. Where people get it wrong, and some of these power rankings and everything that have Penn State at 8 or 9, it's like, really? Maybe I can see an argument for, okay, Ohio State or a Texas being ranked a slightly above. But even then, I still disagree with that. I can understand the argument. I'll listen to it. When you say that Penn State is 8, 9, 10, or below, that's where I'm like, okay, you're just trying to do that to be a fake controversial. You're trying to start a fake controversy.
And the fact is, in the long run, it really doesn't matter. Because the only poll that matters is when the playoff committee comes out with theirs. And even still, the way things are now with the 12-team playoff, every team controls their own destiny. If you're a Big Ten team like Penn State is, go 12-0, go 11-1, you are definitely in. 10-2, good chance to be in. So that's all you have to worry about. I'm with you, Zach. Those people who were upset about Georgia jumping them. And I always feel like you also have to judge a team's victories, not just their losses. Penn State does not have a win close to what Oregon has in beating Ohio State, mm-hmm. what Georgia has in beating Texas. So no issue with that at all. So here they are, number three in the country. I think fans are feeling pretty good. Going forward, it's okay, there's Ohio State, and whether you're assuming it's a loss or not, you still feel pretty good about this team's playoff chances. But let's not forget where Wisconsin is. I think, Zach, in a lot of with a lot of these teams, we make judgments early. Alabama comes into Madison and just crushes Wisconsin, and we say, well, that's not a very good Wisconsin team. They lose their starting quarterback. This is a Wisconsin team now that's won their last three games, has not allowed double-digit points. I know they're not playing very good teams, but they're still doing it on the field, Zach.
Right. I look at this Wisconsin team, and I think it's a shame because Penn State kind of gets the raw end of the deal with all of these games that should be resume boosters, and then hindsight's always going to be 20/20. But West Virginia is, whether or not I still, like, I look at those as quality victories because they're road games, and you're playing those teams at, right, West Virginia was at full strength. That was the first week of the season. They weren't missing any key players. Everybody was there. But now West Virginia is disappointing after preseason expectations. USC is disappointing after preseason expectations. I think there's an argument to be made that Wisconsin could be a top 25 team, and I'm not sure why they're not receiving votes from the AP. I'm trying to look here, and yeah, I don't see anything for Wisconsin. They're 5-2. Vanderbilt's 5-2. Ole Miss is 5-2. I get it. Those are SEC teams, but Wisconsin's bad losses are to Alabama and, well, go figure, USC, but it was on the road. It was in Los Angeles. They put together, now, Western Michigan isn't going to do anything, South Dakota, obviously, and then this stretch that you're alluding to, I imagine, Purdue, Rutgers, Northwestern. I don't put too much value into those wins myself. Purdue might be one of the worst teams in FBS, definitely the worst team in the Big Ten. Rutgers, it is just the train is falling off the rails here for for Rutgers, they're banged up. They are extremely injured. I am not surprised that they lost to UCLA. I was actually kind of expecting it because I figured that UCLA would be a second half team. A lot of young players, new complicated system, and look how that's proven to be. And then Northwestern just doesn't play complimentary football. They have a really good defense. They held Wisconsin to 23 points, but that by proxy, Wisconsin's just going to continue to, eventually you're going to break as a defense. If you're out there on the football field constantly, eventually you're going to give up some points if the offense doesn't help you out. Well, 3 points isn't going to help you out. So that's not a complete football team there. I like the matchup for Penn State. There's really not an avenue where I see Wisconsin. I mean, home field helps. Another week of travel, even with the bye week in there, helps. Camp Randall's a tough environment. And Wisconsin's a solid team, but not to the caliber of Penn State. Penn State is elite in certain categories. I think Wisconsin is good, but they're certainly not great. They're definitely not elite.
Tell us a little more about this Wisconsin, what you know. Who are the players to look for? What kind of style? What we can expect? I know they've now got their backup quarterback is in. Is it Braden Locke? Seems to be settling in as the quarterback. Tell us what we should be looking for from Wisconsin.
So Wisconsin's in an interesting setup here, losing Tyler Van Dyke, who transferred in from Miami. People tried to argue with me. A former college football player tried to argue with me that Tyler Van Dyke was miles ahead of Drew Aller and so much better. And I'm like, you played college football. You should know this better than me. But okay, whatever. Tyler Van Dyke was lost for the season. It's unfortunate. It's a shame. But I talked to Steve Jones, the voice of Penn State football, and he relayed to me that the quarterback battle there was fairly close. So Van Dyke being missed for the season for Wisconsin really doesn't change a whole lot of things on offense for them. Braden Locke is actually, I think, performing fairly better, or at least comparable. He's either the same or better at times than what Van Dyke was giving them through the first few games. So there's not a drop-off there. So don't look at him as, oh, he's the second-string quarterback. No, it was kind of like a 1A, 1B type of thing. And then Ches Malusi, who's been there, it feels like, for quite some time, decided to opt out in the middle of the season. He's going to use his red shirt and preserve that eligibility and enter the transfer portal after the season's over. Tawi Walker, thank goodness they got some insurance, because Tawi Walker was already doing some special things at Oklahoma, entered the transfer portal, and now he's that all-around back that they have. He has 9 touchdowns for them rushing. The second closest is 3, and that is Ches Malusi, who has opted out. So Wisconsin has a nice little quarterback running back duo, but that's really it. I look at the receiving core. I think of Will Pauling. I look at Vinny Anthony, who's kind of that big play threat. But Wisconsin's offense is really condensed among those 4 players, and they're not guys. I would say Tawi Walker can take over games, but a Braden Locke, those receivers, they don't compare to what Penn State can do to counter those things. And Abdul Carter and Deni Dennis Sutton can get after the quarterback. Locke's not a dual threat. He's not complete. He's completing under 60% of his passes. He's prone to throwing the interception. Wisconsin's offensive line is okay. We should probably ask Nolan Rucci, to be honest, how the offensive line is in this case. But Wisconsin is also not the same team that maybe people assume them to be. The Paul Chris days, Brett Bielema, right? Brett Bielema's now at Illinois. That system of, we're going to run 7 offensive linemen, 3 different running backs, it's 4 yards in a cloud of dust. Those days are over. Luke Fickell, who was coaching at Cincinnati, led the Bearcats to a college football playoff appearance as the number 4 team. They got blown out by Alabama, but hey, you made the college football playoff, and you can say that. He's at Wisconsin. His system is more of an air raid type of thing. I don't think he has the players to necessarily complement that, but don't expect them to run this ground and pound heavy type of system. They run a little more spread, RPO. They do lean on the ground game because those are their best assets. Again, Tawi Walker carries the offense at this point. They don't have a lot of elite receivers. They don't have an elite quarterback. They do lean on their defense as well. They came in with a preseason top 10 defense, according to the analytics. Now, they haven't lived up to those expectations, but I would say they're solidly in the top half. So that's what you can expect from Wisconsin.
Yeah, you're right in that. I think Penn State fans, or fans in general, you hear Wisconsin, it's like hearing Iowa, Illinois, Michigan. Mm-hmm. You just assume this is the style, and Luke Fickell came in with the idea of changing that, and you wonder if Wisconsin can get the athletes to excel at that style of play.
It's a work in progress. He's in year three. I like what he's done. I think that's another exciting coaching battle. Now, the Big Ten's filled with tons and tons of very quality, elite coaches. And it's a good thing that Penn State has James Franklin and company, really, to go up against it. Luke Fickell is a hell of a coach. Hell of a coach.
All right. We have just over a minute left to go. How about a prediction for the game and how you see this game playing out, Zach?
Well, if Penn State's going to win this game easily, nothing's easy, but if the game plan that they're going to want to execute is build a lead, because Braden Locke and this team cannot play from behind. I know they have the air raid style, but they don't have the players, they don't have the pieces to be able to do that. So if Penn State can build a lead and continue to wear out this defense, which I think they should be able to do, they have the bye week of rest. I've been arguing that the offense and defense for Penn State will be better. I'm liking this game. I think Penn State wins 34-20. I think that 7-point spread is really surprising to me. I think Penn State is two touchdowns on the road better than a Wisconsin team.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the spread. There was an early spread prior to this weekend's games where Penn State was like a 10.5-point favorite.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then I started seeing some at 6.5. Then it seemed to just regulate somewhere around 8 or 8.5. It's kind of been all over the place. Not sure where it will finish up, but I like the prediction. I agree with you, Zach. I think that's the way it should go. Zach, thank you very much for your two segments. Our show's not over, though. We got lots more to come with Sean Gold coming up after the break with quarter number three. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante. He's Sean Gold from Sean's Take. How are we doing this week, Sean?
Doing good. Ready for another week of college football. Week 8 was as crazy as ever, but you know what? We're continuing to roll with it.
It was, and it was interesting for me. Without Penn State playing, it was a chance to look at everybody else, watch the whole field of games, and some interesting ones. And, you know, last week, I think, when in talking about the previous week's games, we were saying how we still felt pretty good about our picks, even the ones we didn't win, but the games were so close. It was like one play away from winning the bet this way or that way. This week, yeah, it wasn't exactly that way. You were 3-4. I was 4-3. We were talking ahead of time. We had a bonus Colorado pick. Thank goodness for both of us. We took the Colorado Buffaloes. Tell you what, Deion Sanders and his group have been pretty good to us.
They really have been. And, you know, it was in the beginning I was picking against them when I should have been picking for them. And then the past couple weeks we've both been on them and they've treated us very kindly.
They really have. And part of that, I think it's that chaotic Big 12. And I've just been riding, you know, Colorado as an underdog saying, hey, you give me a few points, I'll take them. And it turned out Colorado really didn't need those 4 points against Arizona. They, you know, 34-7, they really took it to them. Probably as complete a game as there's been in the Deion Sanders era.
It really was, and it's really good to see that this team, they're a good football team now, and I think it's one of the first times that you can confidently say this is a well-put-together football team. They didn't show any flaws in that game. Travis Hunter didn't even have to play the whole game. He got banged up again, but they had other guys step up, and that's exactly what you want to see from that team. And you know what? The offensive line, they look a lot better. I don't know what would happen if they played a great defensive line, but they can hang with most anybody right now.
especially in the Big 12, they're not going to play any of the really big boys coming out of that. Let's take a look at a few of the other games. You know what, Sean? Some days you're wrong, and then some days you're not even in the ballpark. And you and I, we could sympathize with Matt Rhule and his Nebraska Cornhuskers. Indiana, Nebraska went into that game. Indiana was a 6.5-point favorite. And I think we both kind of felt like it was going to be a pretty close game. Indiana, despite being undefeated, hadn't been tested at all. I know I felt like, give me Nebraska. Give me the 6.5 points. Oh, boy. 56-7, Indiana crushed them.
Yeah, it went downhill fast. And what's funny about this game is it was 14-7 Indiana with 7 minutes left in the second quarter. I'm watching that and I'm not feeling terrible about our pick. And then all of a sudden, 56-7 at the final score. And it's like, what happened to Nebraska from halfway through the second quarter till the end of the game? They couldn't move the ball. They turned the ball over and Indiana just pounded the rock. They ran right down their throat. And you mentioned Matt Rhule. That's what I'm most surprised about. I think he's a really good coach. He has a good track record in college. I didn't think he would lose a game like this that badly. So credit to Indiana. They surprised us both.
And it's to the point where we need to ask the question, how real is Indiana?
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm excited about them moving forward. And it is. I know I'm going to take them a whole lot, you know, more serious than I had heading into this game against Nebraska.
Now, they have Washington this week. They do have Ohio State on the schedule. But, boy, other than Ohio State, it looks like a pretty manageable schedule. Could this be an 11-1 and a playoff Indiana team? We'll see going forward. Let's go to a couple games that you and I both had the winners in. Notre Dame, Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech was getting 10.5 points, which seemed like a pretty lot of points, but both of us felt like Notre Dame, they were going to pile it up on Georgia Tech, and they really did. 31-13, Sean.
This was definitely one we nailed the narrative on. And, you know, even heading into Saturday morning, that spread had grown to, I think, 13.5, and it did not matter for Notre Dame. They were just the more physical team in this matchup. They were able to do what they wanted to do with Georgia Tech. And it felt good to get that win right there. And it is like we got another big Notre Dame game coming this week, but Notre Dame is looking good right now, and they're better and better each week.
And again, I think all along we as college football fans will overreact to a single game. Early on, it was USC beating LSU. It was Georgia crushing Clemson. Boy, things really turned our narrative since then. And Notre Dame losing to Northern Illinois, we had a narrative going on there that really has seemed to change. It'll be interesting. Notre Dame does not have a whole lot on their schedule. If they could finish the season 11-1, I know a lot of people said, well, once you lose to Northern Illinois, that should eliminate you. Not so fast.
Yeah.
Let's go. This is the next game is the one I think I'm most proud of this pick, Sean. Michigan was at Illinois. Illinois has been playing very well. Illinois was getting 3 points at home against Michigan. And I think both of us felt, you know what, that has everything to do with the name Michigan and nothing to do with the teams that we're playing. And I think we both correctly surmised that Illinois was the better team, and they pretty much handled Michigan 21-7.
Yeah, really, really happy to see Illinois play the brand of football they played. And, you know, it all circles back to what we've talked about, not just last week, but this entire season. Michigan doesn't have an offense. And I think now maybe we're at the point where the rankings are gonna show that you can't just rely on the name brand of Michigan being Michigan. It's not the same team. The offense is one of the worst that we've seen in Power 5 this year. And what everybody else has to realize, too, is the defense is not the same defense that it was last season either. This isn't a great Michigan team, and Illinois showed that. And also, a lot of credit to Illinois. This is a good football team. They're playing good ball right now.
They really are. And I think a team like Michigan will be given the benefit of the doubt probably way too long. I think that's been the case, but I also think you're right. Finally, the reality will show up that, you know what, this Michigan team just is not that good. The game of the week was Georgia at Texas, and this was a great matchup. Both really good teams. Georgia, of course, had the one loss going into this. They lost to Alabama, where they looked awful in that first half, came all the way back, but then Alabama, lightning strikes, and they score a late touchdown to win that game. And here's Texas, undefeated and the number one team in the country. And I think the expression you may have used was they're the most complete team in the country. Well, Georgia went in and handled business.
Yeah, the curse of the number one team seems to be real this year in college football. And, you know, at the time I was really, really on with Texas, thinking, like you said, I said they were the most complete team. And now looking back at it, I think it's easy to kind of kick yourself over this pick. I wish I thought more about who Georgia's coach was. Kirby Smart is a phenomenal coach, and it would not have felt right to see Georgia have two losses in a season. And, you know, I overlooked that Georgia could still be one of the best teams in college football because of how good I thought Texas was. But it's Kirby Smart, and he coached a great game, and that game really was never in question, you know, start to finish. It was Georgia all the way, and I just completely overlooked that one.
Yes, and I think we both had Texas. The spread was 3.5 points. We didn't think that was enough points to sway us. I think we both believed in Texas. Now I'm starting to wonder, who do you believe in that Southeast Conference? It feels like everybody has a loss. Speaking of the Southeast Conference, the one game that we differed on was Alabama at Tennessee. And Alabama, they still can make the playoffs, but they have two losses. They lost this game at Tennessee. I took the Volunteers. I took Tennessee and the 2.5 points. You had Alabama. I really wavered over this one. I think you had to just feel like Alabama was the more desperate team, and they're still Alabama.
That's exactly what I thought. And, you know, watching the game, I was getting frustrated with how they were playing because they had so many chances and they're not capitalizing. It's definitely not the same Alabama team that we've seen in previous years. And to Tennessee's credit, you know, they made Alabama make some mistakes and they capitalized on them. And, you know, they went on a 10-0 run to end the game that won them the game. And it's a big win for Tennessee is really what I think about this.
Oh, absolutely. A huge win for Tennessee. And Tennessee, this is a different Tennessee team than I think most of us pictured, especially going into the season. You know, I'm thinking this is the kind of team that the Tennessee team that rolls up 40, 50 points a game. And then if they play a team like Alabama and Georgia, where it becomes more of a defensive battle, they are not prepared for it. But that's not the case. This is a very solid defense for Tennessee. And the Alabama team, you alluded to it, they just make too many mistakes, a lot of penalties there. Not the same Alabama team that we were used to. All right, the other game, Miami beat Louisville 52-45. We both had Louisville. Don't think that was a real bad pick, but Miami just keeps dancing through the raindrops and finds a way to escape.
I mean, yeah, exactly. I don't regret this pick at all. You know, I mean, we hardly missed out on a cover there. Louisville was in the game the entire time. And then Miami, down the stretch, finds a way. And as you said, dancing through the rain, they've done it in so many games this season where you kind of think this is when Miami's luck runs out. This is where they're going to take a loss and a couple key plays, and Miami comes out on top, and they did it again. It was a very entertaining game to watch. And, you know, Miami's story keeps on going. We're going to see how this team progresses the rest of the season, but they just find a way, some way, somehow they win games.
And as that one undefeated team in the ACC, yes, I know Pitt is there also, but I think the playoffs and a team to get into the playoffs and do well, it hangs on Miami. They've been getting the benefit of the doubt from the officials week after week, Sean.
They have. And it's the same question we thought last week. When is the luck going to run out? They still got some left, I guess.
Apparently they do. All right, Sean, that's it for looking back. Now it's time to look forward. We have a six-pack of games to look at. We're going to do that right after this break. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Sean Gold from Sean's Take. It's quarter number four of our show. Means it's time to make our picks for this coming week. It's time to make our Pulp Daddy picks, Sean. We have a six-pack of games here for us to take a look at. Some really interesting games. I'm curious to see how you're gonna go with them. Let's start with, it's amazing how big a game this is, but Notre Dame is playing Navy. I believe this game is in New Jersey and at MetLife Stadium. Navy undefeated. Both service academies, Navy and Army, are undefeated yet, looking for that at-large or that group of five bid for the playoffs. Could be interesting. And Notre Dame goes into this a 12.5-point favorite. After their loss to Northern Illinois, they've been taking care of business. And quite surprisingly, this Navy game is going to be one of their bigger tests of the season.
It is. Both Army and Navy being ranked, having these incredible seasons, is really fun to watch and a great narrative in college football. You know, as you mentioned, Notre Dame is playing some good football right now. Every week since their loss, they seem to be getting better and better and putting that loss behind them. But I can't overlook what Navy's doing right now. They're having a special season, and it's crazy that Navy actually averages more yards and points per game than Notre Dame. Now, the schedule plays a role into that. You know, they haven't played quite the competition that Notre Dame has played. But I think Navy's going to stick around in this game. I'll take Navy plus 12.5. I don't know if they can beat Notre Dame. I think there's a chance they can. But I think they actually match up pretty well against Notre Dame. And I think this thing is going to be close.
You know, my thinking is kind of the same way. That is a lot of points. And you mentioned the scheduling differences between the two teams. Agreed. However, it's not like Notre Dame's been beating top 10 teams here. They've not had a killer schedule either. I'm looking at it the same way you are, that Notre Dame, this could be, you know, a 27-17 type of game. And Navy covers. That 12.5 points is just a little bit too much for me to take Notre Dame. I'm going with you. I'm going with Navy. All right, the next game, Sean, it's a Big Ten game, and it's Illinois at Oregon. Now, Oregon is the number one team in the country. We all had some questions about them early on. I think they really showed what they were about when they were able to beat Ohio State. Granted, it was at home, but they beat a really, really talented Ohio State team. Now you have Illinois traveling to Oregon. Were you surprised, Sean, the point spread? Oregon is a favorite by 21.5 points.
I am a little surprised by the point spread. And what was it? 19.5 is what Penn State had them at home. At Penn State, is that what the spread was there?
It was like 18, 19 points, something like that, yes.
So I guess logically you can say, well, Oregon should be a little bit better than Penn State right now, so you're going to give them a couple more points. But Illinois has just looked really good since that Penn State game too, and they played Penn State relatively tough, even though Penn State got a comfortable victory there. But I got to wonder about that curse of the number one ranked team in the country right now, Jim. It scares me. And maybe I'm overthinking the whole number one ranked curse right now, Illinois is a good football team, and what I like about them in this matchup is they play a brand of football that's hard to blow out. They're going to run the ball. They're going to try to control the clock, and they'll play solid defense. So over three scores is too much for me here. I'm going to go with Illinois on the road.
I'm with you on this one, too, for the very similar reasons. Illinois is going to want to keep it a low-scoring game, really reduce the number of possessions, hang in there, and hope that at the end they could pull it out. Now, I don't think they're going to win this game, Illinois. But, boy, 21.5 points, you know, you could have, I'll just pick a number, a 31-10 game where you feel like, boy, Oregon dominated this game, and they still will not have covered. That is a lot of points, more than three touchdowns. I'm with you. That's too many points. I'm going to go with Illinois. All right, next up, Missouri, Alabama. And there's kind of a common thread with these games this week. I feel like the games are more interesting than you would think based on the point spread. Alabama is a 13.5 point favorite. Now, this is an Alabama team that has shown themselves to be vulnerable. Missouri, I think I've called them a fraud for a while now, but here they, how about Alabama with the two losses? It's a 13.5 point spread here, Sean.
Another game where I feel so in my head about which direction to go after how this season has gone. Alabama, two-loss team. Is there really a chance that this could turn into three losses? I don't think so. But what about, like you said, a pretty sizable spread for this game? I'm a big Jalen Milroe fan, and I think he will be the best player on the field for both teams. Ultimately, there's a reason that a two-loss Alabama team is still ranked higher than a one-loss Missouri team. So I'm going to go with the Crimson Tide at home. From watching Missouri, I just haven't been impressed with them. And I haven't been overly impressed with Alabama either, but this team still has the potential to be a really, really good team. And I think they're going to be ready for this game. So give me the Crimson Tide with kind of a decent point spread here.
You know, I've been an anti-Missouri guy for a while. I've called them a fraud. I think it was going to show up. I've been down on them the whole time. I've been feeling they're overrated. I've been that on that bandwagon for the longest time. However, Alabama, too, has shown themselves to be so human. This is not the same Alabama team. I just think that 13.5 points is just a tad too much for me. I thought this would be more of a 9 or 10 point spread. Because of that 13.5 points, I'm actually going with Missouri on this one. Not real confident with it, but I'm going with Missouri. All right, the next one up, it's interesting that we would even have this, and this is Texas and Vanderbilt. You know, the point spread is 18.5. It's at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt has shown themselves to not just be the giant slayer who took down Alabama in a fluke game. It wasn't a fluke. They also took Missouri to overtime. Vanderbilt is a pretty good team. They are an 18.5 point underdog to Texas. Is that too many points, Sean?
That's the million-dollar question right now, Jim. I have gone back and forth on this game on what I think. And when you look at the schedules, you just mentioned it, for Vanderbilt, they beat Alabama, and they even beat a good Kentucky team and nearly beat Missouri. That's a good resume, especially for Vanderbilt, who we did not think was going to be anything heading into this season. And then when I look at Texas, they lost to the only really good team that they've played this entire season. That Georgia loss was by far their biggest game, and you know they came out and laid an egg on national television for that one. I have gone back and forth so many times on this game. In the end, I'm going to reluctantly go with Vanderbilt to cover this spread. Their defense is pretty solid, and they've shown they can score against some teams, and I think Texas got a little bit exposed. I'm worried that Texas is going to have this big bounce-back game and blow them out, but 18.5, you can have a lot of different score combinations where Vanderbilt can handily lose this game, but still find a way to cover.
That's where I am at with this one. My thinking, all right, Texas on a bounce back. I'm thinking there might still be a little bit of a hangover for them and them having to travel to Vanderbilt. I think Vanderbilt, after slaying the giant that is Alabama, I think their crowd will be into it. I don't think they're going to win, but I think they're going to keep it within that 18.5 points. All right. Probably the best game, or the best matchup at least, that we have is surprising LSU and Texas A&M. Both lost games early out of conference, Sean. And here they both are, undefeated yet in the Southeast Conference. This is a good matchup, and the point spread reflects it. Texas A&M is the 2.5-point favorite, basically because they're the home team.
A phenomenal matchup. And, you know, I think last week there was a lot of speculation that LSU was going to lose, and they thumped Arkansas 34-10. So I think LSU might actually be a pretty good team, even though I was so low on them earlier in this season. I'm going to back LSU's offense over Texas A&M's offense. And ultimately, Jim, I think that's the difference in this game, is that LSU will have the better offense and will find a way to get this win on the road and cover a +2.5 line as the underdog.
I'm going the other way. I'm going with A&M. I'm giving them more than the 2.5 points for being at home. Another one of those games that hard to call, tough one. Would not be surprised if it's a close one. I'll take Texas A&M. The game means a lot to them. But if they could win this game and stay undefeated in the conference, they could. That sets up for them that huge matchup with Texas at the last game of the season. That would be a lot of fun. All right, finally, we left our Nittany Lions. Penn State is traveling to Madison at Wisconsin. Now, this spread has kind of been all over the place. I saw an early spread that came out before this past weekend's games that was actually 10.5. I've seen it 8.5 somewhere. It seems to have settled in at 6.5 points, Sean. So that's what we're going to go with. Penn State, a 6.5-point favorite on the road against Wisconsin.
I'll keep this one pretty simple. Penn State is the number 3 ranked team in the country. This is a huge game for them. They play against Ohio State next week. Give me Penn State with the points. They need a dominant victory here to then take that momentum against Ohio State next week.
You know, I'm with you on this one with Penn State. And I know some of the concern about James Franklin teams off of the bye. The record is not good. But I think there was that feeling that going to USC, that's the kind of game that Penn State loses. Well, they slayed that dragon. They got that behind them. Now I think with Wisconsin, I think they can begin to taste that playoff bid. And it really is about staying unbeaten, going into that Ohio State matchup. I think they'll find a way, and they'll do it with more than that 6.5-point spread. So I'm going with the Nittany Lions also. All right, Sean, that is it for our picks this week. Keep our fingers crossed. Hopefully we'll have a good week. Thank you all for listening. Make sure that you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.